It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to this edition of the RTC Weekly Download, where we feature old-time radio that I hope you'll all enjoy. We have a lot of variety. This time we're going to feature some police procedurals. Well, one is more realistic and one is more poetic, I guess you would say. The realistic one first. This is going to be the 21st Precinct, and this was voted a favorite of the Benevolent Police Association of New York. From January 1st of 1954, Case of the Stairs.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Collins. Who's trying to kill her? How old is the girl? 16? Where is this? Yeah. East 75th in the basement.
You're in the muster room at the 21st Precinct, the nerve center. A call is coming through. You will follow by transcription the action taken pursuant to that call from this minute until the final report is written in the 124 room at the 21st Precinct.
All right. The officers are on their way over there now. You wait outside for them. Show them where it is. An ambulance, too. An ambulance is coming. All right. They'll be there right away.
21st Precinct. It's just lines on a map of the city of New York. Most of the 173,000 people wedged into the 9/10 of a square mile between Fifth Avenue and the East River wouldn't know if you asked them that they lived or worked in the 21st. Whether they know it or not, the security of their homes, their persons, and their property is the job of the men of the 21st Precinct.
The 21st, 160 patrolmen, 11 sergeants, and 4 lieutenants, of whom I'm the boss. My name is Kennelly, Frank Kennelly. I'm captain in command of the 21st. I was working my night tour, 4 p.m. to 8 a.m. It was a cold, windy night, and I was on patrol in sector car number 2 with patrolman Edward Farrell as operator and myself as recorder. It was about 11:30 p.m., and I had instructed Farrell to drive west on 75th Street from 1st Avenue to Lexington and then return to the station house where I was due to turn out the platoon for the late tour at midnight. After we crossed 1st Avenue, there was no traffic in the block ahead of us, and I saw no pedestrians. Cold weather keeps them off the streets. It's a good policeman. Our headlights cut a swath in the darkness as we cruised slowly in the long block toward 2nd Avenue.
Captain, that old man down there, I think he wants us.
Go ahead, pull up.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Police!
Come on, Farrell.
Right.
Police, help!
What's the trouble, Pops?
He's killing her.
Where?
In the basement there.
Let's go, Farrell.
He's killing her, I tell you.
Down there. Watch the steps.
I got my leg. All right, hit the door. Get away from her. Get away.
Come here.
I'll
kill you all.
Hold still there.
I mean it.
Get up against there.
Get the nippers on him.
Let me out of here.
Stay still, I said.
All right,
I got him.
Let me go.
You've got enough trouble now, mister. Stay still or you've got plenty more.
He's all right now, Captain.
All right, get those hands against the wall. Get him up there.
Yeah, all right, okay.
Okay. Sit down on the floor.
He said sit down on the floor.
All right, yeah. You'll kill her, you not kill her.
You won't kill anybody, mister. Watch it, Farrell.
Yes, sir.
Let me take a look at her.
Oh. Stay still.
Oh, no, don't, please.
It's all right. I'm a police officer.
He hit me and kicked me. Oh, my side. He kicked me in my side.
She's only a kid, Farrell.
All right.
How old are you?
16. My side. My side is killing my face.
All right, just take it easy. We'll get help. Watch him, Farrell. I'm going to call in for an ambulance.
I got him, Kev.
Really hurt.
Is everything okay?
Come on upstairs, Pop.
Yeah, okay.
You know that girl?
Yeah, sure. The Truro girl from my building.
This building?
No, the next building. That one, fourth floor here.
You know him?
No, I never seen him.
She live with her folks?
Her folks, yeah.
All right, you go upstairs and tell them, okay?
Yeah, tell him. All right, thank you.
Car 681 to Central, okay?
Car 681, proceed.
At 388 East 75th Street in the basement.
East 75th Street, K.
That's right. An assault case. Send an ambulance and assistance, K.
Okay, 681, 21st Precinct. The address, 388 East 75th Street, car 634, 635, signal 32. The ambulance is responding, K.
634, 10-4.
Car 635.
Within a few minutes, in response to the radio signal, sector car number 4 and the sergeant's car were on the job. When the call was heard on the radio monitor by the desk officer at the station house, he notified the 21st Squad and detectives James McLeese and Louis DeLuca hurried to the scene. As we waited for the arrival of the ambulance, the assailant, Joe Pacius, sat on the floor in a corner of the basement with his back against the wall under the guard of Patrolman Farrell. The victim's mother had been summoned from the apartment. She tried to comfort the girl.
Anita, my baby, my baby. He wanted to kill me, Mom. He tried to.
Oh, my baby.
Oh.
Mrs. Truro, don't touch her, please.
My baby. Where's the doctor? She'll die.
Now, the ambulance is on the way.
Where is it?
Ooh.
You see?
Mrs. Truro, you'd better stand over here.
No.
It'd be better for her.
Go on, Mom. Go on, baby.
Mrs. Truro.
Yes, all right.
The ambulance will be here right away. Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
My poor baby.
Yes, sir, Captain.
Stay here with the girl.
Yes, sir.
Is that the ambulance, that siren?
Yes, I'm sure it is. Let's go over here, Mrs. Truro.
I don't like to leave. I don't like to leave my baby.
How old is she?
16, just 16. Will she die? She won't die.
No, I think she'll be all right.
Excuse me, Captain.
Oh, yes, McLeese. This is the girl's mother, Mrs. Truro, Detective McLeese.
I'd like to ask you a few questions, Mrs. Truro.
Yeah, anything. Sure. That's the ambulance?
Yes.
Good. Oh, my poor baby.
This fellow, this Joe Pacius, he said he'd known her for a long time.
Oh, 6 months, maybe 7. But she don't want anything to do with him. He comes around to the house, he scares us all. He brings a bottle of whiskey, sits down in the kitchen. He says he wants to marry her. She don't want anything to do with him. But we're scared.
Well, then why didn't you call the police?
I said once I would. I said, get out or I call the police. He said, what would the police do to him? Nothing. He'd come back and tear up the house. So I didn't call. He'd come. Anita would lock herself in the bathroom. We were all scared.
Well, where was she tonight? Did she have a date with him?
Oh, no. She went to a girlfriend's on First Avenue to do her homework together.
Uh-huh.
She's a good girl, Anita. She goes to school. She wants to learn. She wants to learn to go to business.
All right, bring it in.
They take her where? To a hospital?
Yes.
What hospital? Could I go?
Yes, you can go.
Tell me, what was he doing? Was he waiting for her on the street?
I guess. I don't know. I want to help.
Let's leave it to them, Mrs. Truro. They know what they're doing.
All right, easy. Easy.
Oh,
put her on.
My baby, my poor baby.
Oh, Mom, Mom.
Oh.
All right. Take it out.
Oh. He come to the house. He said, where is she? I said, out. He sat down with a bottle of whiskey for 2-3 hours. I was scared.
Now watch the turn there, easy. All right, lift. Up with her.
He said he'd kill her. He'd kill me. I'm glad he went.
Easy now. Keep it high.
Can I go with her? Can I?
Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
See that Mrs. Truro gets over to the hospital.
Yes, sir.
Oh, wait for me.
You can talk to the mother later, can't you, McLeese?
Oh, yes, sir. Right now, I want to talk to that bum over there.
All right, you men. Don't stand around here. Get back on patrol.
All right,
how's he doing, Farrell?
All the steam's out of him, Captain. He's no trouble.
All right, you get on your feet.
Why?
You
hurt me. Hey, get on your feet.
McLeese.
Yes, Captain.
What's your name?
Pacius. Joe Pacius.
How do you spell that?
P-A-K-U-S.
And where do you live?
East 81st Street, 816.
What do you do to justify your existence?
What do you mean?
Have you got a job?
Yeah, I work.
Where?
Different places. Contractors. I'm a plasterer.
How old are you?
27.
27, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you grow gray by the time you're through with this one, mister. I'll teach you to leave that family alone. I'll teach you to stay away from 16-year-old girls.
I want to marry her. I love her.
That's a fine way to show her you love her, isn't it? Almost killing her. You're no good. You're plain no good.
I was a little drunk.
Well, that's a great excuse, isn't it? You get half in the bag and you think you own the world. Well, I'll show you what you own. You don't own any part of it. You don't even own your own time.
All right, Mac, take it easy.
He should be in the hospital, not her. Yeah,
that's enough. Joe, what are you coming around here making trouble for that family? They told you they didn't want anything to do with you.
I want her. I want to marry the girl. She won't speak to me. She won't see me. She'll go out with other guys. All right, I waited for her tonight. To talk to her, just to talk. When I saw her, she tried to go away. She wouldn't talk. Okay, sister, you'll talk. You'll do what I tell you.
You threw her down in the cellar and you beat her up and you almost killed her. And she might die yet.
It was a whiskey. I didn't mean it.
16-year-old girl.
16? I don't know. I don't care. I want to marry. She's a woman.
And you're a man, huh? Well, not in my book, mister. In my book, you're a nothing. A great big cipher.
The suspect, Joe Pacius, was taken to the station house in the custody of Patrolman Farrell, the first officer on the scene. Detective McLeese rode with them in sector car number 2, and I returned in the sergeant's car just in time to turn out the platoon for the late tour at midnight. At the station house, Pacius was taken upstairs to the 21st squad, still in the custody of Patrolman Farrell. There, he would be questioned further by detectives, and on completion of the investigation, booked in on charges of felonious assault. As the senior officer on duty in the 6th Division during the night, I was called to the 25th Precinct, where a 3-alarm fire in a loft building had caused the evacuation of 2 tenements. It was 2:20 a.m. when I returned to the 21st Precinct and walked into the muster room and around the desk to sign the blotter. Hello, Sergeant.
Captain.
Captain.
Red.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Collins.
What about that Truro girl in the hospital, Red? How bad is she?
Two broken ribs, Captain. Her face is pretty badly cut up. No internal injuries, I don't think.
Uh-huh. Lieutenant Gorman, Iceman's ringing in. He made that notification on York Avenue. He got hold of the brother.
Okay.
All right, Iceman.
Did they book that Joe Pacius yet, Red?
No, sir, not yet. They still got him upstairs.
Uh-huh. What about Farrell?
He's still there. As soon as he's booked in, he'll get a couple of hours sleep before he has to go to court with him. That's a mean one, that guy, Captain. 16-year-old girl.
Yeah. I'll be in my office, Red.
Yes, sir.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Collins.
Oh, Sergeant.
Yeah, all right. You take your meal now, right? Okay. Yes, sir, Captain?
Sergeant, I'll tell you what. I want you to... What's that?
In the back room.
Come on, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Somebody fell down the steps.
Yes, sir. That's what happened. Pacius, are you all right? Pacius.
What happened, Mac?
He tripped, fell down the whole flight of stairs.
Did he?
Pacius. Well, he's out. He's out like a light.
What's going on? What's happened?
Where were you, Farrell? He's your prisoner.
Well, Captain, what...
Just a second.
Pacius. Come on. Pacius.
Sergeant, ring for an ambulance, will you?
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
Well, he's out all right.
All right, Farrell. Where were you?
Oh, we were taking him down to book him. He left his hat in the squad room. I went back inside for it.
You were alone with him, McLeese.
That's right, Captain. Yes, sir.
How'd he fall?
I don't know. He tripped, I guess.
Did he? On what?
Captain, I didn't lay a hand on him. If anybody deserved to get thrown down those stairs, he did, but I didn't lay a hand on him.
We'll find out about that, McLeese. We'll find out about that right away.
You're listening to 21st Precinct, a factual account of the way police work in the world's largest city.
One of the more colorful lumberjacks of the Midwest was a lad named Whiskey Jack, sort of fellow who could single-handed lick an entire logging crew or swim one of the Great Lakes with one hand tied behind his back. But as in all heroes' lives, there came a tender moment. As legend recalls, Whiskey Jack was not much for learning, certainly couldn't write his name. It was always the big X that he made on any slip of paper. And one day he came in quiet, like a little subdued. And when they gave him his pay envelope, he signed for it with great deliberation. The clerk looked, stopped, and called out, "Hey, Jack, why the 2 X's?" Whiskey Jack replied,
"Why, son, I have just met me a lovely young lady in the next river town, and we was hitched. So I thought it only proper and fitting that a married man should change his name."
Folklore belongs to every nation's legendary past, And I guess we Americans have some good ones.
Now back to 21st Precinct and Captain Frank Anelli.
Any unusual occurrence concerning a prisoner, injury, death, escape, or attempted suicide is a grave matter. The commanding officer of the precinct concerned is required to make an immediate and thorough investigation and forward his report to the office of the chief inspector and the New York State Commissioner of Correction. Joe Pacchius did not regain consciousness by the time the ambulance arrived. He was taken to Bellevue Hospital. In the meantime, I had instructed the desk officer, Lieutenant Gorman, to telephone Lieutenant Matt King, commander of the 21st Detective Squad, at his home and inform him of the incident. Lieutenant King was at the station house within 25 minutes and sat in my office as I questioned first Patrolman Farrell.
Oh, sir, I didn't leave him for a minute, not since I brought him in.
You got him into the station house about 5 minutes to 12. How come you didn't bring him downstairs to be booked until 25 after 2?
Well, McLeese was conducting an investigation, Captain.
Well, there wasn't much investigation that needed conducting, was there? You were an eyewitness to the assault, so was I.
Yes, sir.
And you had another witness, that old man that stopped you.
Yes, sir.
Did McLeese make any threats against this Joe Pacchius up in the squad room?
No, sir.
You just talked to him calmly?
Well, not exactly calmly, Captain. McLeese didn't think much of the guy. Who did?
Did either you or he use any violence in the squad room?
No, sir.
Well, then when you started downstairs to book him, what happened?
Well, we came out of the squad room and into the hall. I had Pacchius by the arm. As soon as we got outside, McLeese said his hat. We left his hat inside.
Whose hat?
Joe Pacchius.
Didn't Pacchius say anything about it?
No, sir. I guess he forgot.
So you went back for his hat?
Yes, sir.
That was your prisoner, Farrell. You weren't supposed to leave him.
But it was just back in the squad room. We were out in the hall. I didn't really leave him, Captain.
And when you came out with the hat, Pacchius was down at the bottom of the stairs.
Yes, sir.
You were in the squad room with Pacchius all the time between about midnight and 2:25?
Yes, sir.
Was McLeese?
No, sir.
Where'd he go?
Well, when we first got there, he printed Pacchius. Then we went into your office, Lieutenant. McLeese started to question him.
He didn't touch him, you said?
No, sir. He got awful mad at him, but he didn't touch him. And then about 1 o'clock, McLeese went out.
Where'd he go?
I don't know, Captain. He said he'd be back. We'd book him in when he got back. I just sat there with Pacchius until he came back about... 10 minutes after 2.
Any more questions, Matt?
No, sir.
All right, Farrell, that's all.
Yes, sir.
You can go on home. Pacchius won't be going to court tomorrow.
How is he, Captain?
Well, we're waiting to hear.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Farrell.
Yes, sir.
Tell McLeese to come in here.
Yes, sir.
Well, Matt... Looks like a rough spot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure timed out right.
Yep.
I'm kind of anxious to hear what Pacchius has to say.
Well, he was unconscious when they took him out of here. He was unconscious when they got him to the hospital.
Well, we might not get to hear what he has to say, eh, Captain?
Doesn't look good for him, Matt. It was an awful wallop on the head he took. Come in.
Yes, Captain?
Oh. Sit down over here, McLeese.
Yes.
Hello, Lieutenant.
McLeese, sit down.
Yes, sir.
Well, you got yourself in a jam, huh?
I'm not in any jam, Lieutenant.
What do you call it?
Excuse me.
Sure.
21st Precinct, Captain Connelly.
Sergeant Collins, Captain. Lieutenant Gorman would like to talk to you.
Okay.
Go ahead. Captain?
Yes, Red.
The doctor down at Bellevue just called back.
Yes.
That Joe Pacchius has a possible fractured skull.
Possible, that's all they know?
Well, they're making x-rays now.
Yeah. He didn't regain consciousness?
No, sir, not yet.
All right, Red, if you hear anything else, ring in here, hmm?
Yes, sir.
How is he, Captain?
Possible fractured skull.
I didn't push him down those stairs. He tripped.
McLeese, I've been in command of this precinct 2 years. Every day, 24 hours a day, people go up and down those stairs. All kinds of people. Cops, complainants, drunks, narcotics addicts, everything. In 2 years, the only man to fall down those stairs is somebody you've been holding back your temper on all night. From top to bottom, he fell and fractured his skull.
I didn't lay a hand on him, Captain.
And it happens just when you send the only possible witness back into the squad room for a hat.
Nobody around, only you.
He tripped and fell, Captain. I didn't touch him.
You were itching to all night, though, weren't you, McLeese?
Well, who wouldn't? I'm only human. That guy weighs almost 200 pounds, and he's no good. He's not even near human. He beat a 16-year-old girl within this far of killing her, and he would have killed her if the captain and Farrell didn't jump him. So what am I supposed to do, love a guy like this like a brother? I want to see him get what's coming to him.
That's just the point, exactly. You're a cop, that's all. You're not the judge and jury. It's not up to you to see that he gets what's coming to him. Your job is to bring him and the facts before the people who'll decide that. Not to set yourself up on a throne and decide who's right and who's wrong. That's not your job. Get that through your head.
Yes, sir.
Did you throw him down the stairs?
No, sir. He tripped and fell.
Where'd you go about 1 o'clock?
I went out for a meal, sir.
Where else? You were gone over an hour.
Roosevelt Hospital.
Why?
To interview the victim and her mother.
Did you?
I saw the mother, Captain. The victim was still in the treatment room.
You didn't need the mother or the girl. You had two police officers and another civilian as eyewitness.
Yes, sir.
There wasn't any doubt in your mind that on Farrell's testimony alone, Pacchius would be held without bail for the grand jury, was there?
No, sir.
Well, then why did you have to go to the hospital at that point?
I don't know, Captain. I thought I ought to get the girl's story.
This was a felony case. Did you call the district attorney?
No, sir.
Why not? Those are your instructions, aren't they?
It looked open and shut to me.
It looks open and shut to me, too, McLeese. I've got the same feeling about it.
After the interview with Detective McLeese, Lieutenant King instructed him to return to his duty. At 3:30 a.m., Lieutenant King and I drove to Roosevelt Hospital, where we found the mother of the assault victim waiting in the corridor. Mrs. Truro told us her daughter was at last asleep and that she intended to wait at the hospital for any word about her condition. We said nothing of the injury to Joe Pacchius to the mother. In order to talk to her, we suggested that she have something to eat. She went with us to a nearby all-night luncheonette.
Do you want something else besides the soup, Mrs. Truro?
No, it's enough, just the soup.
Some coffee?
No, nothing. Oh, poor Anita, poor baby.
I don't understand how she happened to get involved with this guy. How did that happen?
Oh, a girlfriend knew him. They met. He wanted to come to see her to take her on dates and so forth. She didn't want to. She didn't want anything to do with him. He used to come in the house, breaking almost, drunk like a maniac. He'd scare her, scare me. Sit in the kitchen and holler. He wants to marry her. Push me around. I was scared of him.
Well, you don't have to worry about him anymore.
I'm still scared.
Believe me, Mrs. Truro.
He's got brothers. If he goes to jail, he'll send his brothers. They're just as bad. One came with him once to the house. Just as bad. I don't want anything more to do with him. I move. I take Anita. It's just the two of us. That's all.
He'll be in jail?
No, that's worse. The brothers will find us. I don't want anything to do with sending him to jail. I told the detective that. I said to him before.
Detective McLeese?
Yes, McLeese. I told him I didn't want anything to do with it.
And what did he say?
He said not to be scared. I don't have to. He said Joe Pacchius would be fixed. Fixed good. Nobody would bother us. Not anymore.
Fixed good, huh?
Yeah. I told him, don't fix him. When the brothers come around, they fix us. I told him. Maybe I ought to go back to the hospital. This is very nice, but maybe Anita wakes up and where am I?
Finish your soup, Mrs. Truro.
Yeah, all right. Then we go, huh?
Yes. I'm going to ring in, Matt. Order me another cup of coffee, will you?
All right, Captain.
I'll be right back.
Very good soup for a restaurant.
Sergeant Collins.
Captain Connelly, Sergeant.
Oh, yes, sir. Gorman wants to speak to you, Captain. He tried the hospital.
We left there. Put him on.
Yes, sir. Captain Connelly, Lieutenant.
21st Precinct, Lieutenant Gorman.
Yes, Red.
Captain, I got a call from the Department of Correction man at the prison ward in Bellevue.
Pacchius isn't dead.
No, sir. Far from it. He's regained consciousness. Doctor says if you want to talk to him for a few minutes, it'd be okay. No fractured skull or concussion, just a bad bump. He's okay.
We took Mrs. Truro back to Roosevelt and then drove downtown to Bellevue Hospital. We drove into the grounds at 30th Street and Franklin D. Roosevelt Drive and parked the car. The prison ward on the second floor of I Building is under supervision of the Department of Correction. Upstairs, we were admitted through the barred gates and directed to the room.
Thank you very much.
It's over there.
Yes, sir.
Packius?
Who are you?
We're police officers.
I want to see my lawyer. It's the only one I want to see.
You'll see your lawyer.
Wise guys, that's all you are, a bunch of wise guys.
Wise guys, huh? What does that make you, beating up a 16-year-old girl, a big hero?
I want to see my lawyer.
Tell us how you came to fall down the stairs.
My lawyer. It's the only one I'll tell. I don't want nothing to do with you guys.
You've got something to do with us. You've got plenty to do with us. Tell us about how you got hurt.
Go ahead. Hit me. Hit me. See what it'll get you.
Nobody's going to hit you.
Laying here on my back. Hit me. Go on. I'll get more.
Get more what?
Money, that's what.
You'll get nothing but years, Joe.
I'll get money. I'll get a bushel basket full. I'll sue the city. I'll take them over the coals for that kind of treatment.
What kind of treatment?
Never mind. I'll take it up with my lawyer.
What about slapping that girl around? What do you think your lawyer can do for that? Nothing.
I ain't worried. I'll take only half the money I'm going to sue for, and the city will be glad to get off the hook. I'll get off with nothing. I'll buy a car, and I'll go to Florida.
You've got great ambitions, Joe. I guess we'll pin a medal on you, too.
I wouldn't be surprised. Talk to my lawyer about it. I got the city dead to rights. They can't do that to a guy and get away with it.
You don't seem hurt so bad, Joe.
Yeah, well, the pain's killing me.
What makes you think you're entitled to sue the city?
Those stairs? From top to bottom?
Look, the detective said you tried to break away from him and missed the top step.
That's a lie.
Well, what did happen?
Oh, no. You take that up with my lawyer. But I wasn't trying to break away. Don't let him tell you I was. He's lying.
I don't think so.
I wasn't. I was walking down as quiet as you could. There was this thing sticking up, caught the heel of my shoe. That's the city's fault, ain't it? I tripped and I went down to the bottom.
I looked at those stairs, Joe. That's not what happened. Tell us the truth now.
I caught my heel. I caught it on the step. I fell. I tripped on something that was sticking up. I tripped and fell. The city has to pay for that, don't they? That detective wouldn't tell you what happened. He don't like me. He don't want me to collect.
Doesn't he?
Like he never beat up a woman. Big man. Get him to tell you the truth.
We will, Joe. Come on, man.
Yes. How long, Joe?
Get him to tell you.
Well, big night, man.
Yes, sir.
You know, I've got to admit it. I thought McLeese gave him at least a little help down those stairs.
Captain, I was sure of it.
Oh, thank you, boys. Got a light, man?
Yes.
Cigarette?
No, thanks.
Much obliged. We told McLeese he shouldn't try to be judge and jury. You know something, Matt? Neither should we.
First Precinct, Sergeant Collins. What do you mean, robbed? Held up? Where is this? The what, bar and grill? Oh. What's the address? Yeah. Did they have guns? How many men? How many? Well, which way did they go? Were they in a car? What kind of a car? What kind? What color?
And so it goes, around the clock, through the week, every day, every year. A police precinct in the city of New York is a flesh-and-blood merry-go-round. Anyone can catch the brass ring, or the brass ring can catch anyone.
21st Precinct, a transcribed factual account of the way the police work in the world's largest city, is presented with the official cooperation of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association an organization of more than 20,000 members of the Police Department, City of New York. Everett Sloan in the role of Captain Kennelly, Ken Lynch as Lieutenant King. Featured in tonight's cast were Bill Quinn, Louis Van Ruten, Phil Sterling, Joan Morgan, Barbara Weeks, Jack Orison, and John Larkin. Written and directed by Stanley Niss. Bob Hall speaking.
That was Case of the Stairs from January 1st, 1954. You're listening to the RTC Weekly Download, and now we're going to have our poetic kind of police procedural. This is Broadway Is My Beat, and it's the Mi Ling murder case from 1949.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
Broadway. It's a neon-lighted revival meeting that screams for the joy and the salvation. And it's a lonely path that sighs down into darkness. It's a fury of voices and stamping feet, or a cry that wanders and waits to be heard. It's Happy Alley with happy talk, where a hot trumpet plays background music for a panhandler. However you want it, that's how it is. It's Broadway, My Beat. The November twilight filtered into my office at police headquarters, and I sat there looking at it, pushing away the time for the filling out of my daily report. There were other diversions. Through the open window, I watched a girl walk down the street. She wore a green silk dress that knew summer was over but didn't care. Then I heard two things, a sigh that came from me and a door opening that came from the door.
I have no wish to trespass upon a reverie of delight, Daniel.
There was only one man who could talk to me like that. A miniature of a man called Lee Kai. Lee Kai, professor of Oriental art at the university. He hadn't changed. The same black military-looking jacket that buttoned high on the throat. The same patent leather shoes with spats slightly pink. And the face still as if it had been engraved on yellow shantung.
Daniel, may I presume upon you?
Anything you want, Lee, anytime.
Then permit me to read you this telegram.
Is that all? You could have presumed bigger.
I shall, when you have read the telegram. It is addressed to me and it says in three words, "Terror follows me." It is signed Mei Ling. Only three words. Is not 10 words the usual?
Yeah. He's a frugal one, this Mei Ling, huh?
Mei Ling is a delicate interweaving of all that is lovely and exquisite in a girl. I do not think she meant to be frugal.
I do not think I know what you're talking about.
Of course. Therefore, I will explain. You see, Mei Ling, this lovely girl of whom I have told you so much already, she brings me a statuette of the goddess Kuan Yin, the China's goddess of mercy. And among friends, there is no need for circumlocution.
Of course. For what?
Circumlocution, of course.
Oh.
The Kuan Yin was smuggled out of my bleeding China, Daniel. It is worth approximately $100,000. Mei Ling was bringing it to me. And now, in three words, terror follows her. You understand what I need of you?
Not yet.
I want you to meet Mei Ling's train at 125th Street at 8 tonight. She is in private car 23. You will give her the protection from the terror that follows her, Daniel.
Oh, we have other departments for that, Lee. I could...
But you are the friend department. No, Daniel?
In the nighttime, the 125th Street station hangs over the edge of a glittering world. Arrival and departure have a special meaning in the dark. There are shadows between everything, and the talk is always whispers. I walked out on the concrete platform toward the light on the bulk of the train, and I saw him, the man in a conductor's cap, holding a lantern and looking down at his watch. I asked him a question.
Car 23, next one down through this empty coach.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, wait a minute. Can't get in 23, private coach.
Well, it's all right, I just want...
Nope, can't let you on, nope. Sorry, but nope. Orders.
Want to see something?
Look at this for a second. Go on, hold it up to the light.
Yeah. Police badge, huh?
Yep.
Yep. Train pulls out in 7 minutes, mister.
Oh, bury me not on a lone prairie. Excuse me, mister, I didn't know where... Hey, you big enough to come from Texas. Are you from Texas?
No, now if you let me through here...
Well, city fella, huh? You know how I can tell? City feller's always in a hurry. That's how I can tell.
Yeah, now, one side, friend.
Now, in Texas, it's different. People are friendly. Just folks down in Texas. I'll show you what I mean here. You have a drink.
Maybe you didn't understand. I said one side, friend.
Hey, you meaner than a shoat with a cut snout. No drink, huh? Well, Texans don't prejudice a man because he ain't no drinker. Let me tell you about Texas.
Maybe I got to prove it to you. Out of the way. Oh, you got the idea.
Sure, sure, I got the idea. See if you can get this one through your head. Oh.
What are you...
Central Station. Hey, you, wake up. Now, don't ask me where you are. I've been shouting out my lungs where you are.
Oh.
Come on, get up. There you are. Hey, you're the policeman.
Yeah, the finest of the finest.
Stumbled, huh?
Later. First, I was slugged.
Feature that.
You feature it. I haven't made car 23 yet.
Hey, come back here. I've got to write a report.
I finally did. I finally made it. Car 23. Inside, the place was a shambles. Upholstery ripped, baggage opened and tossed across the seats, as if someone had been in a desperate hurry to find something. I noticed her then. She was sitting there, very lovely, very delicate, the frown pressed at the corners of her lips. I guessed her name was Mei Ling, but I knew she was dead. The bullet hole between the almond eyes made this common knowledge to anyone who took the time to look. To a policeman, a death scene is a place of business. There was nothing there that looked like a priceless statuary called Kuan Yin. I made some notes, called the station master, then found a phone booth to make the violent death of Mei Ling by person or persons unknown a matter of routine.
Sergeant Tartaglia speaking.
Danny Clover. Mei Ling's dead. Send the boys down to Grand Central. Photographers, fingerprints, technical, the whole crew. The coroner, too. I'll wait for them.
Okay. Hey, say, Danny, a guy called. Said he wanted to talk to you. Said it was urgent.
Who said all that?
John Smith. Well, that's what he said his name was, John Smith. I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget. He said something about wait a minute, here, I'll spell it to you. K-U-A-N-Y-I...
Kuan Yin?
Yeah, Danny, that's it.
What's John Smith's address?
1212 Mott Street. Got it?
Yeah. Goodbye, Tartaglia. Anyone who wanted to see me about a Kuan Yin was a man I wanted to see. I waited around Grand Central until the crew from headquarters arrived. Then I took off my squad car and hit Mott Street in 10 minutes. The red brick pagoda that bore the address of one John Smith held all the charm and grace of a 20th century housing project. The only thing oriental about it was a cast-iron dragon that snarled at me from the door knocker. I picked up its head and banged it against the door.
Ah, you would be Danny Clover, and I would be John Smith. The ecstasy is mutual. Please enter.
The thing that stood in front of me, I didn't believe. It was a mound of flesh wrapped in a scented mandarin's robe. Perched on its shoulder was a small white monkey with enormous eyes that loathed me with an enormous loathe. John Smith looked like a fat crock of Ming pottery, but he talked as if he'd spent a lot of time tilling the good earth around Harvard.
You admire my monkey, Danny Clover. Rest assured, he admires you.
I hate him. Get him out of here.
You are frank, Danny Clover. We shall get along splendidly. Now, run along to bed, Max. It's way beyond, you know. I'll tuck you in later, Max. Now go.
Revolting beast, isn't he? I say that deliberately.
It depends on your point of view. Me, I find all the answers to all the mysteries of eternity in Max's eyes. Hmm. You gaze at my house. You like it?
Yeah, looks like you've collected all the loot in China. Cozy, though.
Spurious loot, Danny Clover. It's all fake. These statuettes, for instance, tourist stuff.
Hmm?
And all this rubbish, nothing so delicate or so desirable as the Kuan Yin image. An evanescent image. A will-o'-the-wisp image.
You don't say. Tell me more.
I shall. A most intimate source in Hong Kong has revealed to me that the fabulous, the priceless Kuan Yin has vanished. Do you have a theory as to where she might be?
Should I have a theory?
I thought perhaps the eminent Oriental art expert known to both of us as Li Kai may have helped you formulate one.
Your most intimate source operates in New York, too.
I have other intimates.
Besides Max, try one from Texas.
Texas? What is that, a person, place, or object?
You know, I wouldn't know.
Exactly. And now, Danny Clover, a word of caution. The Kuan Yin is a legend among my people, a fairy tale.
Fairy tales are sometimes bloody.
A most discerning observation. On a sensitive and intelligent mind, they can leave a most fatal scar. Sometimes not only on the mind.
It's sweet the way you try to scare me.
The Kuan Yin is a goddess of mercy and compassion. If you know where she is, may she watch over you. If you don't, we have nothing further to discuss. And now I must tuck Max in. Au revoir, Danny Clover.
I shook his hand, watched him wince, then bowed out of his fat presence. John Smith was a man who would keep. Now there was one place I just had to go, to the university, to break the news to Li Kai. It was at this time in my life that I exploded the myth that the thirst for knowledge never ceases. The door to the Arts and Science building was locked. It took me a half hour to find the night watchman, go through the policeman's badge routine, and get ushered to the self-service elevator.
Wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I feel silly saying this, but floor, please.
The third.
Good, me too.
I've never seen you about the building. What are you in, arts or sciences?
I never knew which. I'm Danny Clover, policeman.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. And you're in,
Seismology. I'm Professor Higgins.
Professor?
Oh, here we are. Third floor.
Oh, yeah.
You, were saying?
I was saying Professor of Seismology with a question mark after it. What is seismology, exactly?
Exactly. It's that branch of geophysics which has to do with earthquakes and their attendant phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my lab. Good night.
Oh, before you go, and in non-scientific terms, could you tell me where Professor Li Kai's office is?
Li Kai?
Yeah.
How nice. In the Argo, any friend of his is a friend of mine. Now we'll shake hands. I'm glad to know you. I'll show you his office.
You've known Li Kai for a long time.
Why, he slapped my... He was in attendance when I was born. There were no doctors nearby then. In China, Mr. Clover. In the interior.
Oh, and from that moment on, you became interested in earthquakes and their attendant phenomena.
Pretty nearly. Understand, Mr. Clover, I enjoy seismology. A girl can always make her way in the world with a good, sound knowledge of seismology, I always say.
I'll say the same thing.
It does make for dull conversation, doesn't it?
Well,
Here's Li Kai's office. Professor Kai. Professor Kai. Professor Kai!
There was only one man who could lie on the floor like that, a miniature of a man called Li Kai. He had only changed a little bit. The patent leathers were the same, and the spats, the crinkled face. But the small change made a big difference. The sharp object sticking in the middle of his black military-looking jacket made him a venerable ancestor to whatever good he'd done in this world. I knelt down beside him. It was a letter opener plunged deep into his back. And on its handle it said, Acme Life Assurance Company. Put your life in our hands.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. 50,000 or more, always in the jackpot on Sing It Again. Music by Gene Autry and Vaughn Monroe. Mystery and thrills with gangbusters Philip Marlowe, Johnny Dollar, and Danny Clover, the Broadway cop. That's the one-way ticket to top fun on most of these CBS stations every Saturday night. This fall, when you hear them all on CBS, Saturday night promises top music, top adventure, and a chance at radio's top prize.
There's this about Broadway. It savors the exotic while it's taking bites out of a hot dog. The deaths of Mei Ling and Lee Kai were duly reported for the next morning's newsstands, were scanned by the crowd while reaching for their respective mustard jars. Then Broadway went about its business. You can't blame Broadway. It's got too many other things to consider, like T formations and mass substitutions, the weather, making a buck. But a policeman with a murder in his hands has to make a world outside all that. Mine revolved about a specific Chinese statuette called Kuan Yin, and incidentally worth $100,000. It also included paying final respects. I took a ride down to a twisted alley off of Mott Street. The festivities for Lee Kai's funeral had already begun. Venerable Chinese ladies and gentlemen stood on the curb and with great ceremony lighted firecrackers and tossed them serenely into the air. As the body of Lee Kai approached, others tossed money into his open coffin to ensure his price of admission into heaven. Walking directly behind was a lady by the name of Higgins, Professor Kate Higgins. She was dressed in a mandarin robe, and her tears were the tears some enchanted princess might weep. There were only two, one under each eye, and each one a jewel. And then across the street through the procession, a face that I had seen once before in a train station brought me back. Pardon me. I'm sorry. Pardon. Tell me what Texas, kid. I got more time now.
Who are you?
Why leave a great place like Texas just to strong-arm a city fella?
Take off, friend. They warned me about talking to strangers.
In here, friend, in this alleyway where we can be far from the city's rattle. In here where we can be pards. In here.
Take your hands off of me.
Talk to me, pard. Who told you to slug me on that train?
I can do it now without nobody whispering in my ear.
Do it!
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
It's going to be a well-filled saddle tonight in the old hoosegow. I was looking for Professor Higgins. This is her laboratory, isn't it?
Yes. The professor isn't in. I'm John Scarn, her assistant.
Danny Clover, police.
Social or business? I only ask because Kate has such various callers. Last week it was a gentleman peddling hot Persian prayer rugs. I got quite a size him out of him.
Size him?
You're not hep, are you? Size him. Earthquake. A big bang.
Tell me, what do you do around here when you're not having seisms?
Well, I'll explain it to you. See, these things here are seismographs. They're connected to another machine embedded in concrete below this building. Oh. If there's an earth tremor, it's picked up by the machine downstairs and recorded on these.
I see. And this needle here writing on this rotating drum records the time of the shock.
Precisely.
Interesting. Mind if I take a closer look?
Well, take it easy, Mr. Clover. We don't need a tembler to disturb the needle, you know. It's very delicately balanced. It'll even record footsteps that come too close to it.
What do you do with these recordings after you've got them?
File them. Each recording is for a 24-hour period.
Unfile yesterday's reports and send them to my office.
Well, but...
And do you get reports from other stations that do this work?
Yes, every day, but...
Send yesterday's, all of them, down to police headquarters.
Now, see here...
Mr. Scarn, you had your size them today?
I'll send everything down just as soon as I can get them together.
Good. And quietly. No one's to know. Another thing, Mr. Scarn. Who has access to this lab?
Why, just Kate and me. And, well, yes, the night watchman. Yes, we three. We have the only keys, I believe.
Thanks. And Kate, Professor Higgins, where would I find her?
Perhaps at her apartment. 125 Morningside Drive, I believe.
Thanks again, Mr. Scarn.
Just a moment. I have to put something on.
I'll wait.
Plover. Why is it that everything happens to you while you're on duty? Maybe it's because you're on duty.
Oh, it's you. How nice. You caught me just as I stepped out of the shower, so you'll have to take me as I am, robe and all. Come in.
I could wait outside until you...
A shy policeman, how charming. You can trust me. Go on in.
Thank you, Professor.
Over there, but the fire's nice. I always dry myself by the fire, but you interrupted that.
Easy, Clover.
I'm here. Tell me.
I didn't say anything.
Oh. Shall I get us something? A drink? Do you object to the phonograph? Some men do, you know.
I saw you at Lee Kai's funeral.
I saw you, too.
You're different now.
You're not?
That's right. I'm still thirsting for knowledge. So talk to me about things Chinese, Professor.
The Kuan Yin, for instance?
For instance?
A miraculous goddess believed by the Chinese to have only to kiss a wound to make it vanish.
$100,000 a kiss. It's expensive healing.
There are some who would pay more.
Two murders, maybe?
More, if they have to.
Yeah. You told me Lee Kai slapped you into the first breath you ever took. What else did he do for you?
Everything. He was my father, my brother, my companion, my teacher.
And Mei Ling?
I didn't know. Everyone in China, policeman. Nice policeman.
And a man named John Smith?
John Doe, yes. John Smith, no. Give up.
All right. Invite me to an earthquake sometime, will you? I'll take time out for it.
You'll love it. There's nothing quite so exciting as when the earth moves. Danny?
Yeah?
The Kuan Yin. You could give her to me. I'm only a professor on a professor's salary, but I could think of some way to pay you for it.
Oh? What makes you think I've got the Kuan Yin?
Because Lee told me he'd gone to you. Because you found Mei Ling. Because it would have been simple for you to steal it from a dead girl.
Yeah, it would have been. But you know, I didn't think of it. Also, she didn't have it. Now it's your turn again.
Lee Kai would want me to have it. No one else.
I'll make a note of it, Professor. Now, would you unlock the door, please? I promised Mother I'd be home early.
Of course. There's frustration everywhere, isn't there, policeman? Nothing but frustration.
I think I remembered to tip my hat. I know I remembered to get back to police headquarters. I hustled Sergeant Tartaglia off his fat comic book and sat down at my desk to go over the sheaf of seismographs I'd had Skarn send down. Not only were they dull reading, but for a long time they didn't make sense. I kept trying. You can talk, Tartaglia.
Item one, Danny. I've questioned the Texas cowboy in his cell. Mm-hmm. McGrath won't talk, won't open his mouth. Hey, in a Texan, this must be some kind of terrible disease.
Okay, physician. Item two.
Item two is alibis, good and indifferent. At the time of Lee Kai's murder, John Smith was giving a dinner party. Assistant Skarn was calling a square dance. Hey, you know, Danny, they're fun. You ever been to one?
Ask me sometime, Tartaglia.
Yeah. Item two continued. Professor Higgins was to a movie. The night watchman checked in at a station the other side of the campus. Item three. San Francisco Customs reports this Mei Ling never had no Kuan Yin.
Tell me that again.
The Kuan Yin Mei Ling was supposed to have. She never had it. Danny, this means two people was killed for something they didn't have.
Huh? You said something to Tugler? When San Francisco Customs reported they had no records on the Kuan Yin, something clicked into place. If the Kuan Yin existed at all, I figured there was only one place where it could exist. So I went there, back to the university in the office of Lee Kai, lecturer and collector of Chinese art, now deceased.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Clover. We thought perhaps we would meet you here.
The place was a mess. Standing in the midst of the debris was the monkey-owning poet John Smith. And in a corner, with a soft light playing with the amber of her hair, was Kate Higgins.
Danny Clover, it's always a delight to be where you are.
The policeman is a meddling, stupid fool, Kate.
Yeah, you warned me, didn't you? First to the hired thug, then during a lecture on spurious loot.
Mr. Clover, I'm afraid I must dispense with you.
Let him talk. I like to watch his mouth.
Thanks. So I'll talk. Lee Kai was a wise little man. He had the Kuan Yin all the time. All he wanted was to find out who was trying to get it away from him. He came to me because he knew his enemies would follow him to me.
And it backfired, shall we say, in his face.
His and Mei Ling, the girl with whom he planned the whole puppet show.
You have talked enough, Mr. Clover. Quite enough.
I'd been watching Smith, but where that knife came from, I'll never know. He held it low, slanting upwards for ripping, and then he lunged at me. I sidestepped and reached back, grabbed one of Lee Kai's art figures, and threw it at his head. He ducked, and the statue shattered against the wall.
Kuan Yin. The Kuan Yin.
And there it was, an ebony image shining with some inner light. It held us in a kind of suspended trance. Lee Kai had been clever. He'd encrusted the Kuan Yin in a cheap plaster cast and set it alongside the rest of his art, one of the oldest tricks in the world. I came out of the trance faster than John Smith did. He lay there with the rest of the crockery, just as pale, just as broken, just as unconscious.
He can no longer harm you, Danny. He was an evil man.
Yeah, and tricky. Hiring that hatchet man McGrath to kill Mei Ling and slug me on the train. Kate.
Yes, Danny?
Maybe I shouldn't ask you this, Kate. But how come you were with Smith?
I knew his greed would finally lead him to Kuan Yin, as your curiosity led you to her. And to me. To me, Danny.
Kate, do you always repay kindness with murder?
What are you talking about?
You killed Lee Kai.
Danny, you're insane. Why do you talk like that?
Because the seismograph in your lab registered a disturbance at 9 o'clock last night, the time of Lee Kai's murder.
How do you know it wasn't the recording of a minor shock someplace in the world?
Because no other laboratory picked it up. That's when you stabbed him, Kate, at 9 o'clock. You said you were at the movies. Nobody could prove that.
Danny.
But you weren't, Kate. You weren't at the movies. You were in your lab. You stabbed Lee Kai and dragged his body down the hall to his office. He was a small man. You could have done that.
Yes. It's no use. You would deprive me of the Kuan Yin anyhow.
Two killings for the goddess of mercy. Doesn't add up.
I would kill anyone who would deprive me of the Kuan Yin. Yes, you too, if I could now. Danny?
Uh-huh.
Let me hold the Kuan Yin, Danny. Kuan Yin?
Yeah. Here.
Kuan Yin. Fabulous. Kuan Yin.
I watched her hand slide down the side of her cheek and her body go taut. Her eyes fixed and the Kuan Yin narrowed. I caught her before she fell to the floor. When the boys from headquarters came, it took four of them to heave John Smith onto a stretcher. They started for Kate Higgins. I told them to mark her fragile. Even a professor of earthquakes can break. In the November sun, Broadway shimmers like some frozen city rising out of a frozen lake. It's clear, crystal clear, and its air is fresh and clean. You close your eyes because you know it's a lie. The easy laughter that snarls when your back is turned. The spectaculars that advertise the grave. The welcoming hand that turns to ice in yours. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover and is written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The musical score was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch, and the program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. The cast tonight included Mary Jane Croft, Charles Calvert, William Johnstone, Barton Yarborough, William Conrad, Junius Matthews, and Jerry Hausner. Stay tuned for Sing It Again, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for now, but we'll be back next week. Will you join us then? This is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.